Napa know-how.
When you purchase a set of Napa brake pads and rotors, you get a discount code from Fanatics.com worth up to $50 towards your favorite sports gear. While Napa can't help your team reach the promised land, we can help make sure your car will, because these brakes come with something no sports team does: guaranteed performance. Great brakes, great price, great fan gear. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
Offer expires September 30th, 2017.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day, especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth, you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth, they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth, you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King, locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza. Melis.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast with the Rain and Jays. Today, it's me, your boy, Jay King from MassLive.com with Sam Jam Packard, the great. We are all witnesses to one of the greatest preseason runs in NBA history, an undefeated 4-0 preseason, which the Celtics wrapped up Wednesday night. Thanks to Shane Larkin, who is my hero for fending off preseason overtime. But Shane Larkin wasn't the real story. Obviously, Kyrie Irving was fantastic. The starters as a whole were fantastic. Three-pointers were flowing. Let's start with Kyrie. Kyrie was just ridiculous, Sam.
He was amazing. He did all the things that we know. We knew he was capable of, and just we hadn't seen him exactly put it all together in a Celtics uniform, but today was the game where he made the kind of the step back three. He did the ridiculous dribble move and transition. He made some ridiculous just passes that he's not normally known for. Nice finishes around the rim, and again, just making great shots. It was like the perfect Kyrie Irving game. I'm personally excited for the
Excited for it to count. I mean, finally it's going
to
count.
For it to be like a regular season game. I'm saying I want the regular season game to start. Like, he's great, and it's just I'm excited for the regular season.
Yeah, I'm sick of watching the Sixers. I'm sick of watching the Hornets. give me Cavs Celtics, man. But yeah, Kyrie, amazing passing. Started off with 8 points in the first 3 minutes. Then went into pass mode. I just think the ball movement, especially that the first unit has shown, it has just been really, really impressive. I think Ryan Bernardoni, Danger Cart, tweeted it. He said, I didn't think the Celtics would be this cohesive this early. And, like, yeah, it's preseason, but I think from a standpoint of doing things the way that Brad Stevens wants them to, which means passing the basketball, trying to find the open man, and, you know, defending, contesting shots, staying solid defensively. The Celtics did everything you would have wanted in the preseason. That, like, everything. Every single thing. What else you got? What else you got, man? You got anything else?
Well, I was just, like, talking about their ball movement. It's not like they're even at this point running elaborate actions or, like, a lot of plays. It feels like their ball. A lot of the ball movement is just natural at this point. It's finding the open man, and there's when they can do like the three man weave at the top of the key with Horford, Kyrie, and Hayward, which they seem to do to start the game a lot. It's pretty unstoppable. And the same thing with the two man game, just with Kyrie drives it a little bit, kicks it to Gordon Hayward, drives and kicks it back to Kyrie. They did that a couple times and just ended up with a wide open threes. I was worried initially about this team just not having enough three-point shooting, but if they're going to have this great passing and this many open three-pointers, they're going to be dangerous. Every member of the starting lineup had two made threes. Jalen hit two. Jason Tatum hit two. Horford hit three. Hayward hit three. It was a three-point fiesta. I mean, they shot 50% from the field, which is not something you can expect, but just that ball movement is so crisp. And what do you think about the starting lineup and starting Jason Tatum at the four? I think it's a bit of a crazy idea just because we saw Jason Tatum still make some rookie mistakes of, like, he was on a three-on-one and just took a dumb charge, and there's some still adjusting to his game, but I like the idea of having you Kyrie Irving as your point guard at the one and Al Horford at the five, and then really being completely interchangeable two through four between Hayward, Tatum, and Brown. And we've seen the Celtics not hesitant at all to throw, like, switch Tatum onto smaller guards, even some point guards. I know it was small sample size, but I just think the Brad Stevens system, there really is no position two through four. So if you have three guys who can, like, really transition seamlessly through those positions, like those three guys, I think it's what the Celtics ultimately end up going with. I know there's going to be situations where they want Baines and they want Morris, but I just don't think Morris is as, like, kind of fluid and as athletic as Tatum. So what do you think about the idea of, I don't know, to start the season, but eventually I feel like Tatum's going to end up being a starter for this team.
I don't hate the idea. I think that there will be times, like, LeBron's coming. I mean, the Celtics are going to Cleveland to meet LeBron on Tuesday. It's not going to be as easy to keep guys out away from the paint as it is against Charlotte and as it is against Philadelphia. Like, it's just not. You're going to need some more size. You're going to need some more physicality. I think Morris will be the guy. I think at this stage he's just a better player than Jason Tatum. And Tatum has done some impressive things. Like you said, he's looked pretty good in switching moments, whether he's going guarding Kemba Walker, other guys that he's tried to handle. For the most part, he's looked good on the perimeter. He's rebounded the ball well. He is a good rebounder. I just think Morris, once he gets into shape, he's the way to go. And I mean, either way, the Celtics are going to have a very switchy lineup. Either way, they're going to have a long lineup. Either way, they're going to have a very skilled lineup. I just think having that little bit of size and ruggedness that you get with Morris, I'd want that. As far as switching goes, though, I've got to talk. It wasn't even a switch, but we've got to point out that one possession Jaylen Brown had on Kemba Walker. Kemba is...
It was amazing.
That was just a delicious, delicious possession. Like, Kemba is one of the fastest, shiftiest guards in the league. He is very good player, very tough to stay in front of. Jalen stayed with him on the crossover, stayed with him on another crossover, and then Kemba went up, blocked it. It was like, how many crossovers? One, two, three, step back, blocked it. It was an incredible possession. And then Brown blocked Marvin Williams, Charlotte's power forward, on the next possession. That was some wow moments from Jalen Brown right there. That was incredible versatility to cover a point guard in space on one possession, swat the crap out of him, and then cover a power forward in the post, swat the crap out of him.
That's why I was trying to argue with you last week that he may be more important than Marcus Smart.
No, you were wrong on that one still.
I think,
you,
but this
you
is,
didn't say
this is,
more important. You said better defensively.
No, I said more important to the Celtics this year. That's how I framed the entire conversation. But that's nonetheless, I think what you saw with Jaylen Brown right there is his ability to guard smaller players, those faster players, and stay with them athletically, and then use the length to get the block. He's going to be a huge reason why this team's defense, if it becomes a very good defense, his ability to kind of clamp down on small guys like that and then also transition and block the big players, I think is going to be huge for them.
Got to block the big players.
Got to block the small ones too, but the big ones are harder to block. So if you can block the big ones, that's an impressive skill to have. But I want to go back to the Marcus Morris thing. I was just this is the first time Celtics fans have seen him in game action, and it didn't seem like he was in.
He wasn't in the flow like everyone else.
He's not in the flow of things, and that's definitely going to be the case just because he missed so much time, and this was his first game. But just stylistically, when I think of Marcus Morris, I don't think of him as the kind of ball movement player, kind of 7 seconds or less type of guy.
Moving. 2 weeks ago, would you have thought of Jason Tatum like that?
No, and that's a valid point. So I may retract everything I just was about to say. But you're right. I guess I was going to say is like, does Marcus Morris, is he going to fit into the kind of that ball movement, crazy ball movement, five out offense that the Celtics were running? But you're right. He has had zero time really in the system, so there's no reason why he can't just. But man, that five out when they're just five guys around the 3-point line. They are so dangerous in what they can do, because really, if there's any dribble penetration and someone has to help, the Celtics right now are just doing a fantastic job of passing and finding the open man. And if people are closing out too hard, we saw Jason Tatum. Another reason I like him in this lineup is because he's going to be guarded by a lot of fours. If they try to close out too hard, like we saw Frank Kaminsky, he has the ability to just take it right to the rim, and with that five-out lineup, there's not going to be many people there. So, I don't know. I'm on team play. I don't know if start Jason Tatum is the movement, but it's team play Jason Tatum with the starters a bunch.
Yeah,
is that a lukewarm enough take that I can back myself up to?
I'm very impressed by the way Tatum has acclimated himself, both offensively and defensively. You know, I think there were a lot of questions when he came out of college. Is he going to isolate too much? Is he going to do this and that? He's taken some tough post-up fadeaways at times, but for the most part, he's just playing in the flow of the offense like everybody else. So is Kyrie Irving, who has never been known to do that before. And so is everybody else, really. The Celtics have really.
And this Brad guy, man, he convinces everyone.
This Brad guy can convince some dudes.
He can convince you to share the rock, man. You walk in there thinking you're a star, and Brad Stevens will have you. He's have you believe in different things, passing his life.
I need him to coach my men's league team, so I can start passing again too.
I know the dude who just chucks immediately. You play 3-point line to 3-point line, don't you?
I'm fat these days, man. That's how I gotta play. I got no choice.
So what'd you think about the rest of the roster in terms of non-Kyrie players on this team? The one guy who stood out to me, and it wasn't for a great performance, was Gershon Yabusele. It's like we learned that sometimes the dancing bear is just a. He's got the grace of a normal bear. He's just crazy out there, throwing his body around. Not the best night from Gershon. Entertaining as hell, but what'd you see from him?
Yeah, he's just kind of all over the place. And he doesn't always seem to know where he's supposed to be positionally. He's very much a rookie. He's just a great big bowling ball of kinetic energy. He's just always on the move, always on the go, always in the middle of things, and not always positively productive. So I don't know how the front court rotation will shake out without Baines. Like, do they go with just Marcus Morris off the bench? But they have to go with a five, right? It has to be either Yabu or Tice, so one of those guys. I don't know what they'll do as long as Baines is out for the opener. There are definitely minutes open there. I think if I were the coach, I would lean toward Tice from what I've seen in the limited preseason minutes. I just think he doesn't make as many mistakes. He's been more solid, but we'll see.
I saw some people on the Twitterverse yearning for some for Shemmy to get some of those minutes, but I just don't think he's a large man, but I don't think he's big enough or tall enough to guard like the other team's five. So I just don't think that's a feasible option for kind of their backup big rotation.
Yeah, if you play Ojale, you're playing really small. Like, you're playing him and Morris together, and then you're super small. So maybe it can work against some teams. Maybe the Celtics can get away with it. Maybe they're better off sacrificing size because those guys will be more solid than Yabu. But I think I would lean toward Tice from what we've seen. But, I mean, we haven't seen everything. We've seen four games and not a lot of action. Brad and the coaching staff have seen a lot more than we have.
I'm liking the four-game preseason. It was the perfect amount of warm-up basketball where I didn't feel like an idiot for watching it because it didn't count. Like, it felt like watching all these four games were perfect, and now I'm excited to get ready into the regular season. I don't know. Is there any other players that you wanted to talk about tonight? Because if not, I feel like we can get it right into some regular season preview, because Kyrie Irving made some interesting comments today, both to the Charlotte Observer and after the game. Any other players you wanted to talk about?
Skinny Marcus Smart is still surprising to me. Like, every time he just blows by someone or finishes a layup in traffic or does skinny Marcus Smart things, it still hasn't, like, set in yet that he's not the same dude he was last year. So when he does that, it shakes me every time.
Him finishing at the rim is just like, whoa, buddy, where did this come from? Like, that just, I felt like he would always go up last year with and, like, try and draw fouls, but never really draw fouls because he was the guy, like, jumping way shorter than every other player. But here, you're right, it feels a lot more explosive, and it feels like it's made his ability to finish that much better. So you're right. Slim Marcus, Skinny Marcus, whatever you call him, he's skinny now, and he's wonderful.
Yeah, that one play where he just burst by his defender in transition, like semi-transition, and then jumped into, I think it was Cody Zeller, and finished over Cody Zeller at the rim. Like, okay, Marcus. That didn't used to be you, but I guess that's you now, man. I got to get used to it. I'm not yet used to it. Let's get into, before the Kyrie stuff, the Isaiah Thomas stuff. Because Isaiah Thomas said, that he may never speak to Danny Ainge again, ever. And I got reaction on Twitter from both sides. Some people saying Isaiah Thomas was whining, and other people saying they're with Isaiah Thomas. It was crazy for the Celtics to trade him after all he did, or at least they understand. Not it was crazy for them to trade him, but they understand why he felt that way after all he did and then getting traded. I just think this has always been Isaiah Thomas. Like, Isaiah Thomas is the guy who carries everything with him, all the slights, all the motivation, everything. He's a guy who is more candid than any professional athlete I've spoken to, more honest about his feelings. He's emotional. He keeps everything and uses it as motivation. Of course, he wasn't gonna look at Danny Ainge and be like, "Oh yeah, that's cool." Like, Danny traded.
We'll go out to dinner. Yeah, we'll catch up. Or it's gonna be great.
Yeah, this is Isaiah Thomas. This is the guy who takes, like, he'll point out some Bleacher Report article that didn't list him in the top 5 point guards in a media session without anyone asking him. He'll be like, "Oh yeah, did you see that Bleacher Report article? It didn't have me in the top 5 or top 10 or whatever it was." And then he'll go on saying how it was misguided, whatever. Like, he uses everything. And so this was always going to be the way Isaiah Thomas was going to react. I didn't know he was going to maybe never speak to Danny Ainge again. But Isaiah Thomas was always going to take this trade very poorly, especially after all he played through, his sister's death, his hip injury, his teeth falling out, like, all of that. And then to be traded for another point guard, the Celtics gave up a lot of other pieces to get another point guard. Obviously, he was going to be like this. I totally understand why he's so hurt. I understand, obviously, why Danny Ainge decided to make the move he did, because he felt it was necessary for his team to improve. So I don't blame either guy for his actions. Maybe I should have a hotter take on this, but Isaiah, Boston loved Isaiah because he was so passionate and he was so emotional and he was so open and so raw. And you can't turn on him just because he's still passionate and open and raw and still motivated by every single thing that everybody has ever done to him. Like, that's what Boston fell in love with. that's Isaiah Thomas, guys. Like, that's him. That's the same guy you loved for 2.5 years. That's why you loved him. Just remember the times he was there, which were awesome. He was amazing. He was incredible. Remember those, and to say he's whining, shut up. Shut up. He's just open. He's raw. And that's one of the best parts about him. That's one of the most fascinating parts about him. That's why he was so great to cover, to root for, to follow over the last 2.5 years.
That was generally my exact reaction when this first controversy came out. The one, piece of this discussion that I found interesting and I found myself kind of thinking about the other side was this discussion of possible, like, hypocrisy when he's just discussing loyalty, because, like, he was out there recruiting Gordon Hayward.
My man, Coley Mick. Coley Mick was leading the charge. Red.
Shouts to Coley Mick. Mixtape's a wonderful podcast, and Coley Mick's a wonderful gentleman. I'd love to have him on our podcast. And his thread was very interesting. He's talking about how Isaiah's out there kind of complaining about loyalty, but at the same time, Isaiah would be plenty willing to give up a number of players on the Celtics if it meant getting a star. And he's out there recruiting Gordon Hayward. And at the time, like, we knew if the Celtics signed Gordon Hayward, that pretty much meant they would have to deal Smart, Crowder, or Bradley. So it's like, there's kind of a weird, was he being loyal there? Like, when he thought he was the kind of the guy in Boston, like, I don't know, it was kind of okay to be disloyal to kind of his teammates in the eyes of just trying to get better and win more basketball games. But in this sense, he did all this stuff in the playoffs. Like, he said he probably shouldn't have played in the playoffs, and then he gets traded. So, like, you can see why he thinks that's disloyal. But I see the accusations of hypocrisy, and it's not wrong. Like, everybody in basketball, like, winning is the ultimate goal. So, of course, like, the relation, I just don't imagine, like, think of any relationships are going to be, like, stronger than, like, chances or opportunities to improve the basketball team. So I understood that argument. I thought that was, like, a valid critique. I don't think Isaiah was whining. I don't think you can critique Isaiah for what he said in terms of just his feelings, and because that's what Isaiah does. Like you said, he constantly has a chip on his shoulder, but from that hypocrisy standpoint, it was interesting. It definitely got me thinking, and I thought there might be some at least some validity to it.
Yeah, and I think the difference in the way Isaiah sees it, I'm sure, is that he was the guy. He was the player who made second team All-NBA. He was the guy who the Celtics acquired before the trade deadline 2.5 years ago and brought them to the playoffs. He was the guy who emerged as an all-star the next year as they became formidable. He was the guy who made second team All-NBA and took them to the Eastern Conference Finals and played the day after his sister passed away and put himself on the line, sacrificed his body by playing with a damaged hip for the last however many months of the season. He was the guy in Boston. He was the guy who stood to become a legend, really. And Isaiah Thomas, if he had continued on the path that he was on, he was going to become a Celtics legend. The Celtics were going to be very good for a long time. And if he got healthy again, if he played like Isaiah Thomas did the last couple of years, he was going to be one of the beloved Celtics. And all, like, Avery Bradley, as much as he did for the Celtics, He wasn't going to come close to that. Marcus Smart, same thing. Like, all those guys are, like, pieces, but Isaiah viewed himself as the piece. And that, I think, is the difference in his mind. And I do see the hypocrisy and the feeling like there's no loyalty. And maybe he wasn't being loyal. But I also think, like, his vision and the way he thought that the Celtics saw it was that he was the guy to build around. And obviously, they thought they would rather build around Kyrie Irving. And I think that hurt him very deeply, that they chose another point guard. Not just that they chose another player, but another point guard to shift around.
But Danny Ainge didn't think he was the guy. He thought Kyrie Irving was the guy, which is why we're here now. And speaking of Kyrie Irving, he made some interesting comments.
That was a nice transition. Solid, sir.
I know. I've been working on the segue right there. It's not all John Corrales, everyone. It's other people can segue, too. Before the game, he was talking. It was some article with the Charlotte Observer, and he was just talking about, like, experiencing Boston in the city. And he said, I'm just driving around and thinking, I'm playing in a real live sports city, which I think is just a fire quote because I've been anti-Cleveland since Jump Street. Ever since 1995, ALDS, I've been anti-Cleveland as an entire city. So, yeah, not a real sports city. A trash city in general. All they have in their town is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, a very cold lake, and then a few sports stadiums right in the middle of the city. Nothing else. Yeah, if anyone's ever seen the hastily made Cleveland tourism video, it's very accurate. You can go check out two of their buildings. It's a terrible place. I wasn't, like, preparing to go on an anti-Cleveland rant when I wanted to bring this up, but that's just kind of the feelings I have for the city of Cleveland, and I was just proud of Kyrie. I knew it was going to take a while for him to kind of, like, to grow on me, but as soon as you start going after Cleveland, that wins points in my book.
He also wore a hat that said, I believe, uncomfortably good to the post-game interview tonight. So, uncomfortably good.
I believe uncomfortably good.
I think it said uncomfortably good. I was just watching it on TV, and it flashed across. And
he's got a lot of hats with a lot of messages on them.
A lot of message hats. But
we got to start creating our own Raining Jays message hats for Kyrie to wear post-game.
Yeah.
You can slip him a hat for the before the game and go, yo, the fans want you to wear this one.
Sure. I'm sure he'd be on board. But to the Cleveland thing, he is – I don't know whether he's doing it intentionally. I don't know whether this is his plan, but he is setting himself up for all the boos on opening night. Like,
oh, yeah.
He didn't just request a trade from the Cleveland Cavaliers, who had reached three straight finals and had won an NBA title with him. He then proceeded to say that it was not, what did he say, not a truthful organization.
Not a real, oh yeah.
He's been throwing shade about the coaching staff. He's thrown shade about the playing style. He's thrown shade about now the city. He has, I don't know whether it's intentionally. He may just be raving about all the things that he likes about Boston and not trying to run over Cleveland and the Cavaliers organization with a bus. But from a Cleveland perspective, this dude has been out there and very much throwing shade at the entire Cavaliers organization. He is going to get booed so much, and I think at this point, like, if I were a Cavaliers fan, I would probably boo his ass too. I might give him a big ovation because he was part of the championship and he was a huge part of the best team in franchise history. But that dude has not said a lot of kind things, or at least he's been very passive aggressive about his situation in Cleveland.
If I was a Cleveland fan, I'm a big fan of the cheer, like for the first time, and then boo every single time after that. You show him you care a little bit, but then you realize he's part of the enemy. But that opening night's shaping up. Like, I feel like both Bron and Kyrie, just because there's so much like emotion, they're both going to go for 40 in that game. Like, it's just going to be a crazy shootout. And the amount of intensity you want on an opening night, I'm looking forward to it. That's going to be awesome. The other just
okay,
fun
question. Question.
Go for it.
But does Kyrie stay true to his past happy preseason, or does he go total like one-on-one because of the whole Cleveland thing and opening night and all the emotions? Does he just try to have 55, or does he try to have like 25, 12, and 6?
I'm going to do a cop-out answer. I think he starts out in the system. It's pass happy, scoring a lot of points. But I think it becomes like a close game late, and he gets hot, and that's when you see Brad's is not one to turn away from a hot player like in isolation late in games. Like, he knows what, like, he basically did it with Isaiah the entire year last year. So I think if Kyrie is feeling it late and he has all this motivation to score a lot of points, if he has something like 25 points heading into the fourth quarter, then you can see more of that isolation pulled out, where you see Kyrie basically just going trading basket for basket against Bron. That's where I see that kind of the points going in. But I don't think he starts out the game and it just starts chucking. I think if the isolation comes, it comes because he's had a good game up until then, and then he's just like feeling it late.
It's a goddamn shame that Isaiah Thomas is hurt, because that would add even another layer to opening night, which is going to be fantastic anyways. But if you had Kyrie versus Isaiah Thomas in a clash, oh boy, that would have been amazing. Like, IT going for 40 and then like flipping off the Danny Ainge in the front row, that would have been amazing.
Ante Zizic just like getting in battles with people, with Gershon Yabusele, man, it's gonna be wild stuff, man.
Isaiah Thomas, he would have been doing like, you know what time it is, like a minute into the game. It would have been after every bucket. It would have been like, you know what time it is, pointing to the wrist. Oh man, unfortunate that he's hurt. Unfortunate that he still seems a little shocked by the trade. But fortunate that Sam Packard, who is now coughing, made it through this podcast. You've been sick, Sam. And
yo, I was dead. I had 103 fever this weekend. That's an abnormally high fever. I was straight dead for like 2 days. You guys should be glad I'm back, because I almost didn't make it.
We're happy to have you back. We're happy to have you talking Celtics. And we're happy that the preseason is over and the regular season is just 6 days away, 5 days away by the time you guys listen to this podcast, which is just about over. If you don't subscribe to us, search for Locked On Celtics. You can get us on Audioboom, Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify, anywhere you listen to podcasts. Subscribe to us. Give us a 5-star rating, all that. We're here Monday through Friday for your Celtics needs. We are the only Daily Celtics podcast, the greatest Daily Celtics podcast, the greatest podcast, Celtics podcast in general, maybe podcast in the entire world. And we're growing.
We want to be on our squad, so you better be on our squad.
Be on our squad. That's the message we'll leave you with. That's it for this episode of the Locked On Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. John Corrales, Locked On Celtics, Millie.
Just realized I forgot to do a Jams junk drawer. Got to keep this very quick. Only two very important things I noticed. Mook Morris was wearing the biggest headband of all time. It looked like his head was about to fall off and he needed a giant headband. I don't know what's going on with that, but I am for it. And second thing, the Bernie and Phil no tax, no free delivery commercial is creepy. I don't like it. And it makes me forever team Jordan's Furniture. At least at Jordan's Furniture, you can see a movie on a giant screen, not just have people yell at you. So I'm saying I'm team Jordan's Furniture. I'm team Morris giant headband. That's Jam's Junk Drawer. This has been the Locked On Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Is that the new iPhone?
Yeah, got it on T-Mobile. Fastest iPhone deserves America's fastest LTE network.
Introducing the amazing iPhone 8. It's the best iPhone yet, now on America's best unlimited network. For a limited time, save up to $300 on the amazing iPhone 8 after 24 monthly bill credits. And now join T-Mobile's iPhone upgrade program for free.
Eligible trade-in and finance agreement required. If you cancel service, you may lose promo credits. Contact us for details. Video at 480p. Small fraction of users over 50 gigs per month may have reduced speed. See store for details.